welcome to the evening. On WNEW-FM, this is Jonathan Schwartz. Rhinoceros, and when you say you're sorry. The Ultimate Spinach and Pamela. Slick. David Crosby wrote it. It's called Triad. It's interesting that nothing splinters more tumultuously than a menage a trois. Three people who've entangled themselves in psychological and physical nudity, and suddenly, boom, the splinters fly like broken glass, cutting corneas and hearts and ears and butchering faces and hands and bodies forever. That's war, baby. No question. Good evening, WNEW FM in New York. This is Jonathan Schwartz, and this nice Thursday, the 21st of October, 1969. I'll be with you for an hour or so here in Metro Media Stereo. With our summer behind us, I would imagine that we're all stuck together, digging in for the winter. Those of us who had feelings about departure from our territory here, I would imagine those people have departed, leaving only us, defending the territory for the cold winter that lies ahead. It's funny, only 6 months ago, Simon and Schuster published a collection of Joan Didion's essays called Slouching Towards Bethlehem. And Didion wrote a wonderful piece about New York and her reasons for leaving and moving to California with her husband John Gregory Dunn. She wrote it in an essay called Goodbye to All That, meaning, of course, us and this, that I'd like to share with you tonight on this 21st evening of the 10th month of the new year, 1969, the Thursday night. Somewhat chilly night. It is easy to see the beginnings of things, and harder to see the ends. I can recall now with a clarity that makes the nerves in the back of my neck constrict when New York began for me, but I cannot lay my finger upon the moment it ended. Can never cut through the ambiguities and second starts and broken resolves to the exact place on the page where the heroine is no longer as optimistic as she once was. When I first saw New York, I was 20, and it was summertime, and I got off a DC-7 at the old Idlewild temporary terminal in a new dress, which had seemed very smart in Sacramento, but seemed less smart already, even in the old Idlewild temporary terminal. And the warm air smelled of mildew and some instinct programmed by all the movies I had ever seen and all the songs I had ever heard sung and all the stories I'd ever read about New York informed me that it would never be quite the same again. In fact, it never was. Sometime later, there was a song on all the jukeboxes on the Upper East Side that went, "But where is the schoolgirl who used to be me?" And if it was late enough at night, I used to wonder that. I know now that almost everyone wonders something like that sooner or later, and no matter what he or she is doing. But one of the mixed blessings of being 20 and 21 and even 23 is the conviction that nothing like this, all evidence to the contrary notwithstanding, has ever happened to anyone before. Of course, it might have been some other city. Had circumstances been different and the time been different and had I been different, might have been Paris or Chicago or even San Francisco. But because I am talking about myself, I am talking here about New York. That first night I opened my window on the bus into town and watched for the skyline, but all I could see were the wastes of Queens and the big signs that said Midtown Tunnel this lane, and then a flood of summer rain. Even that seemed remarkable and exotic, for I had come out of the West where there was no summer rain. And for the next 3 days, I sat wrapped in blankets in a hotel room air-conditioned to 35 degrees and tried to get over a bad cold and a high fever. It did not occur to me to call a doctor because I knew none. And although it did occur to me to call the desk and ask that the air conditioner be turned off, I never called because I did not know how much to tip whoever might come. Was anyone ever so young? I am here to tell you that someone was. All I could do during those 3 days was talk long distance to the boy I already knew I would never marry in the spring. I would stay in New York, I told him, just 6 months, and I could see the Brooklyn Bridge from my window. As it turned out, the bridge was the Triborough, and I stayed 8 years.
First one in the city, wearing all those grass-stained jeans. Nothing is forgotten, everyone is pleased. someone got his hair cut. The girls have lots to say. His friends had felt more comfortable with it worn the other way. And I don't know if I see you again.
Carly Simon, from a brand new album, her first album, Carly Simon, Reunions. The Incredible String Band on WNEW-FM in New York.
Said goodbye song when I was 17. I used to know you. You're a true friend of mine.
Incredible String Band and the first girl I loved. Oh, the legendary stories about first boys and first girls. Mine is probably no different than yours, except that I'm a fellow obsessed with proper spelling. It might be the only difference. Lucy. The first girl I loved, Lucy. Off to Bennington did she go, and there I am in New York, and it's winter time, and a great deal of correspondence is taking place. Now, a fellow who wants to spell everything correctly also wants to type everything correctly. Love letters to Bennington, typed, not in my own hand. It's funny, I taught myself to type at a very young age, 7 or 8, and I can hardly write longhand. I had to have special permission for small typewriters in examinations in high school. That's quite true. I was one of the first people to find, like, silent typewriters. I'd be placed in the back of the study hall. Lucy. Bennington. January. And I am writing a love letter to her. Listen, I remember so clearly my language. Listen to it. The pomposity of it. No different than yours, except I was a stickler for proper spelling. In describing the city without Lucy, I typed, "The asphalt belches angry hordes of spite." Think about that. Being prepared for a freshman in Bennington. You know, there are 83 feet of snow on her ground and my ground, and our common ground is not so clear either. And I'm typing up, "The asphalt belches angry hordes of spite. The city is so lonely without you." Down to the corner of Madison and 92nd Street. 3 a.m. Into the mailbox. There is a violent snowstorm. Not just nice white, I'm dreaming of a white Christmas snow. I'm talking about dangerous stuff. 83 feet. The temperature is -1. And I make my way to this mailbox at 3 o'clock in the morning. The asphalt belches angry hordes of spite. The city is so lonely now. To Lucy, Bennington, Bennington, Vermont. Back home satisfied. I wake up with a start, sudden sitting upright, bolt upright. At 6:15 in the morning, I misspelled lonely. I spelled it L-O-N-L-Y. I left out the E. There's no question I did this. Back out to the mailbox. Now there's 400 feet of snow. Maybe 420 feet of snow on the ground. And I bend over, and also the wind, the snow is everywhere, And I take a look at that little card, pickups at 7:31, 8:46, 9:16. Those trucks don't come, even on a summer day, they don't come at 7:31. Have you ever seen a mail guy come and pick up the mail in those boxes at exactly 7:31? Is it ludicrous? But I believe it. And I wait, hunched over, in a doorway, just out of the snow, but just barely. And it's now minus 13 degrees. And I wait till 7:31. And I wait till 8:46 and 9:16. And nothing. I've got to get this letter back. That is my strategy. Finally, at about 10 of 10, through the snow. And now it's the biggest snowstorm in the history of the northeast section of this country. That mail truck lumbers up Madison to 92nd Street ever so slowly, making its laborious way up. And a guy who's dressed like an Eskimo comes out, and I accost him, racing out of my door. I'm now frostbitten from top to bottom. I really have been there since, 6:20? Three and a half hours. Sir, please, I have a crisis. Now here's a kid, me, 19 years old, using the word crisis. I have a crisis. It's still snowing just as violently as ever, and I'm addressing a mail guy. I have a crisis. What kind of a crisis could I have? This guy just stares me down. I say, hey, I mailed a letter, and I've got to have it back. I've had second thoughts about it. Would you be good enough? He says, that's ludicrous. It's government property. You can't have it back. You've mailed it. Good day to you, sir. Good day to you, Sonny. Even when I'm 50, somebody's going to call me Sonny. I say, no, please. And then tears. Tears that froze immediately on my face. I mean, real tears, not fake tears. 4 minutes of this, standing there, me grasping at this guy, clinging to him, please. He finally says, you go to the post office, 88th Street. It's between 2nd and 3rd, and you tell him what you want. I'm going from this mailbox back there. I'll be back there in 10 minutes. Well, can I ride with you? No, you've got it. Certainly not. It's government property, government property. Government property. Government property. I got to walk from 92nd and Madison to 88th between 2nd and 3rd. There's a 70-mile-an-hour wind. It's now 28 degrees below zero, and there are 73 feet of snow on the ground. Government property, government property. I brought new meaning to the word run and arrived, 13 or 14 minutes later. Now, let me see. What was the name of that post office? It's no longer there. At least I don't think it is. It was on 88th Street for many years between 2nd and 3rd Avenues, and it had a neighborhood name, like Trafalgar or the Atwater Post Office, whatever. I arrive, almost unable to talk for the cold. And I go up to the proper window, and I say to an enormously obese Irishman who was wearing a tag, it said John Callahan. I said, Mr. Callahan, I have a crisis. I stuck with the word crisis. I have a crisis. I mailed a letter to my loved one. She's at college in Bennington, and I've had some second thoughts. I can identify the letter. I can tell you what it says verbatim. I'm prepared to read you the letter. Please, please, would you consider returning it to me? All this because I knew in my heart of hearts, in the sentence, the city is so lonely now, I had spelled it L-O-N-L-Y. Lucy in college would laugh. That would, the L-O-N-L-Y would totally nullify the romance of the asphalt belches angry hordes of spite. Callahan looks at me. What he sees is what you probably would see. A twitchy, neurotic kid. Frostbit. Teary. Neurotic beyond all knowing, pleading his case in the dead of winter. Callahan goes into the back. He's gone 9 or 10 minutes. He returns with my letter. I see it. That's it, I say. Please open it. I swear to you, open it. It's okay. I'll read it to you verbatim. Please, please open it. What is your name? I tell him. Where do you live? I tell him. May I see some credentials, says Callahan. I show them. Please open it, I swear to you. He opens the letter. See, see, the asphalt, I'm just reading it out loud to him. The asphalt belches, you see, I told you it was mine. He reads it slowly, grimly. He looks up at me sternly after concluding and says, you misspell lonely.
The news is all over town.
The Whopper beat the Big Mac.
And to celebrate, Burger King is offering you a free Whopper when you buy a Whopper this Saturday and Sunday only. All you have to do is say,
the Whopper beat the Big Mac.
That's right. In a coast-to-coast test among people who eat both burgers, the Whopper beat the Big Mac for best taste overall. And if you say,
the Whopper beat the Big Mac,
you'll get a free Whopper when you buy a Whopper. So let's hear it.
The Whopper beat the Big Mac.
The Whopper beat the Big Mac.
The Whopper beat the Big Mac.
Okay, everybody, when can you get a free Whopper when you buy a Whopper?
This Saturday and Sunday only.
Where?
At Burger King.
At Burger King.
And what do you have to say?
The Whopper beat the Big Mac.
Aren't you hungry for Burger King now?
Offer good at participating restaurants. Limit one per customer per visit. Void where prohibited.
When everything is dark outside and it's just you alone with the music, it's time for the Nightfly.
Under train of graphite and glitter, under sea by rain, 90 minutes from New York to Paris, well back, 76 will be A-OK. I'm Lester the Night Fly. Hello, Baton Rouge. Won't you turn your radio down? Respect the 7 second delay we use.
Donald Fagen, the Night Fly. Something new on Warner Brothers Records and Tapes.
We've got provisions and lots of beer. The key word is survival on the new frontier.
LP or tape, $6.29 at all Discomat stores. If it's only records and tapes, it's only Discomat.
Crazy Eddie's going movie crazy with the Crazy Eddie Video Club. That's right. Crazy Eddie's got a club with all the services you'll ever need for your home video enjoyment. When you join the Crazy Eddie Video Club, you'll receive a Crazy Eddie Video Club card entitling you to rent any movie for $3 a day and $1 each additional day. And you get 10% off Crazy Eddie's low price on all pre-recorded tape purchases. And you get a free copy of Home Video Magazine and a coupon good for a free video head cleaning and performance evaluation, and you won't have to leave a security deposit for the rental of any single tape. Crazy Eddie has one of the largest selections of pre-recorded videotapes anywhere. Comedy, drama, musicals, adventure, movies for children and for the entire family. So see Crazy Eddie now and become a member of the Crazy Eddie Video Club. The Crazy Eddie Video Club. Now you can rent your favorite movies at prices that are insane.
And if you've got an Atari home video game, you won't want to be without the new Space Cavern game cart from Apollo. Crazy Eddie's got Space Cavern right now at a very low price. Call Crazy Eddie at 212 area code 645-1196. 645-1196. Jonathan Schwartz, it's the 21st of October, 1969. And this is WNEW-FM Metromedia Stereo in New York.
chainsaw.